Eyes are what? The whole process of seeing. Scientists is what? What are those photons and what are those things in there? Right, it's just endlessly, right? It's like, you know, milliseconds of just reading data, right? Right, but it's very rapid, right? And yet it appears to us, see, like you appear to me as solid. But that's, right, Alex? I'm misperceiving it, right? The eye is giving me like you're a solid thing, right? And that there's something going on called seeing. but yet there's really nothing. It's just momentary, you know, nanoseconds of experience, like the waterfall, right? Just endless little tiny droplets that appear to us as solid. We go to the river and we say, oh, you know, I'm back at the river again. There's the river, as if it's the same river we saw before. As if what I'm seeing now is the same thing I was seeing just a moment ago. Right? It appears that way, doesn't it? But in actuality, Every moment is fresh and never have been experienced, right? Isn't that true, Alex? From a scientific point of view. Yeah. And yet we endlessly need something new. We endlessly need stimulation, don't we? Why? Because we don't see that it's always new. It's always fresh. We can take the same walk every day and we can think, oh, this is boring. I gotta go see something new. See? But the truth is, every moment of that walk is new. Everything we see is new, isn't it? Like when I see this, right? I have to make up a story that I've seen this before. But the truth is, this is only happening right now, isn't it? Right? In truth, I've never seen Kevin before, but unless I create a story that I have. Right? But even seeing you before was not like this. Right? Because this is fresh. And alive. Is that true? What? Could be, eh? I mean, is that what you're saying, Carol? Well, thank you. You see, there's no such thing as Buddha nature, is there? Reflect on that. So you have been reflecting on impermanence, outer impermanence, inner impermanence, continuous permanence, momentary impermanence. Are you getting a sense of the of really what's going on here in this phenomenal world? Physical phenomena, material phenomena, mental phenomena. Yes.
You know, what you just said about seeing this for the first time and that everything's really fresh, I mean, that really strikes me. It's from a different perspective than, yes, everything's impermanent. It's just so easy to see this and go into the story about it and stay in the story and not, you know, moment to moment, see every moment of life as fresh. I'll admit I don't. You know, and that sounds wonderful. I mean, can you say more to that? But or maybe not.
You just want me to contaminate it.
Yeah. Words. I realize that as I'm saying it. But yeah, it's like this kind of, it's not cynical, but sort of a tainted, you know, yeah, I've taken this walk before.
What?
Yeah, I have sort of that tainted view, you know, a lot of times that, yeah, I've taken this or I've seen this before. And it's not that I don't enjoy it, but again, it's, you know, I'm not experiencing it fresh like the way you're talking about it.
Yeah, we've never, I mean, think about food. Mm-hmm. Every taste we took tonight was new. Right? I mean, even if you ate, what was it called, Brian? What was the soup called? Which is a name, right? I mean, even if you had it every night for your whole life, when you ate it tonight, that was a totally new, fresh experience. Right? You know, your taste buds and your nose and your eyes were seeing it and experiencing it freshly, weren't they? Totally new and fresh. And if we weren't, it's because we weren't what? Present. Simply present. Without a concept, without an idea, without a reference to past or future, which is all just created by the thinking mind. Yes, definitely.
I just was thinking how that kind of view seems to come at times when the mind is just very, quiet. And then all of a sudden it just pops out at you, and you have this view that is very fresh and I have to say this, jeweled. You know, just like, yeah. And there's and it's just a very joyful kind of view.
So, what is this right now? Evelyn.
It's a moment right now.
Yeah, here it is. It's always here. I don't want to take away from Brian, but it's really not about the oatmeal and the strawberries. All of a sudden, what? Marilyn, you were saying what? All of a sudden, it just stopped. And all of a sudden, the clouds parted for a brief minute, and you could see, and everything was lit up. Right? So practice is about keeping it lit all the time. Keeping it clear all the time. Having direct perception of how things really are. But understanding these three seals are so important because that's the contamination, you see. Those are the clouds. this fundamental misperception of seeing that which is impermanent as permanent. And then we'll get to the other two marks in the next few days, but this is the one we're dealing with today. So we gotta see clearly so we don't attach. Because from attachment comes suffering. Why are we attaching? We think things are permanent. We think it's real. It's happening. Every good experience, every terrible experience. Right? How long do they last? How long do they actually last? And again, with even that experience, even if it lasted hours, each one of those hours was made up of endless momentary points of experience, right? But in actuality, they're just points of experience, moment to moment. Isn't that what's been going on all day? I mean, we could make a story about, well, been on retreat today, and you know, we could turn it into a 3-minute story. Right? We have an author here, right? We could make it into a story, couldn't we? You know, this is the story of a day retreat. But the truth is, all that happened today were just moments, you know, just a moment of experience after a moment experience, moment experience. Isn't that what was really happening? But how many of us saw it like that? Yes, but Kat. Wait, hold on.
Time is a made-up construct. It doesn't actually exist. But you have to have it to have something that looks linear. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have anything linear, then there's no fun game.
There's no what?
There's no fun game. Life is just all now.
Well, I don't know. You might want to give it a try sometime. It might be more fun than you think, Kat. Could it be that you've been missing the fun all these years?
No.
Yeah, I mean, it's... When we say, you know, my past, what are we talking about? I mean, what are we talking about when we talk about the past? Are we talking about something that exists? Isn't that true? It only exists as what? Yeah, story, memories, images. So, yeah, right. But it's not real, is it? And yet people carry around this thing called the past. Like it's some kind of permanent thing. Like my past is permanent. It's a thing. I am the way I am because of my past. Isn't that the way we talk? Yeah, we talk that way, don't we? Yes.
The past consists of causes and conditions that brought me to this very moment.
Right, but the only thing that's real is what?
The present.
Is this moment.
Right.
Right?
Well, yeah.
Well, right? I mean, isn't that true?
Right.
I mean, where is the past? You're saying who you are today is the effect of past causes and conditions.
Yes.
Partly. Which have all disappeared. Mm-hmm. Is that true or not? I mean, this is important stuff. This is, you know, this is like what, this is the kind of stuff that Buddhists meditate on, reflect on. It's like, so we understand what's really going on here. And that's just not like light stuff. It's because look how much our rumination and our belief in the solidity of our past and its power over me, how much of that is conditioning the way I'm showing up today? Is the past permanent? Is it a thing? The effects can be long-lasting. I'm interested in long-lasting. You got to talk to Kat. Kat was just over the same time. It's just a made-up concept. So well, I don't know how can things
it
be long-lasting. What does that mean, long-lasting? Like how long?
Well, as you know, you were saying, I believe last night or this morning, whatever. You know, there's change that happens quickly and change that happens slowly. You can call it macro or micro. Mm-hmm. And there's that perception of time and length of time that has to do with sort of the field in which humans experience life.
Mm-hmm. That sounds very serious.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the soup.
I like your idea about length of time. I mean, how long is a length of time?
Well, you know, we do measure it in years, right?
What?
We do measure it in these weird things called years that have
years.
To do with rotations of bodies around other celestial bodies and whatever.
And how do you know that something is going to last?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, so
I
you don't
know how long something is going to last.
So do you think the fact
but
that
you've experienced things that last longer than others?
But I get an interesting question since you're a very intelligent woman with a scientific background. What is the process by which these things from the past continue into the present? And will continue for a length of time, a long length of time. What is the process that maintains it, well, that it's going to end up that way?
You know, forms are, they're not instantaneously impermanent.
They are.
They
according
change.
To Buddhism,
they're
everything is momentariness.
They're constantly changing, yes, but that doesn't mean that they disappear. This building has been here for some length of time.
You mean, would you compare the length of time that it's been here like to the age of the universe? I mean, would you say there are...
No, I would say it's shorter.
Would you say like a blink of an eye?
Compared to...
Yeah. So I mean, what is time?
There are, you know, there's this concept that Thich Nhat Hanh talks about, like beginningless time.
Mm-hmm. But I'm interested in that first thing because you said, but you know, it takes a length of time to change some of this stuff.
To change in ways that we can sense.
Sense what? Sense what? Sense the, impermanence.
The change in ways that the human senses can sense.
Yeah. So this is the problem. We can't change the human senses. They're very limited. We can change.
They're also constantly changing.
Right. What we can change is our perception, which is wisdom. Right. See, that's what we change. That's what wisdom is. Right. Because you're right. Physically, we can't see all these things, but our wisdom can understand that and therefore live according to its wisdom rather than, you know, the way things look. Right. So that's why the cultivation of wisdom, understanding, you know, why we're doing this. Why are we doing this?
What's this?
This, I'm pointing to the, yeah. This. I mean, why are we doing all this about impermanence today? To cultivate what?
Wisdom. Yeah,
because we have misperceived. Trying to explain today because we've, you know, from birth misperceived through the data that our sense is giving us, you know, the way things really are. Because we misperceive, and again, that's just not, I mean, that could be like, oh, that's interesting. But the problem is from that misperceptions comes our actions. And from our actions of attachment and aversion and of body, speech, and mind come, you know, a whole range of emotional states, right? Which are often emotional states of suffering, unhappiness. So, you know, wisdom is the offset. You know, in Buddhism, wisdom is to see things as they are, not as we think they are. Length of time it takes to change.
Isn't it more, it's not just to see things as they are, but to experience them? To experience it all as it is?
Yeah. Ultimately, we want to live the truth. We want to experience the truth of how things are. But often first we need the view. Some people say it's sort of like the view, it's like you're going for a walk. It's like the view are your eyes. You know, your eyes can see where you're going. You know. The feet is like it's the practice, you know. I mean, like you can have the view, you can have the eyes that sees where to go, but it's your feet that are doing the walking. So often we need the view, and then we need the practice and the realization so that it becomes real. But the view is very important, because if you can't see where we're going, we'll just be stumbling around, right? Taking, you know, roads that go to all kinds of places, not where we want to go to. So now let's come back to the mark of impermanence and your contemplation of it today, your own bodies, our bodies, this skeletal system. That's all kinds of things are attached to, covered with this skin bag, on temporary loan for us for, if we're lucky, you know, 70, 80 years, some more, some less. It's a loner. You know, like, what are we going to do with it? I mean, we only have it for a short time. Huh? You see, what are you going to do with it? How do we make the best use of it? I mean, you know, impermanence, death, sickness, these are the big ones. Mortality. are we going to do with these opportunities that we've been given? This vessel that has such capabilities of wisdom, of purpose, of meaning, this intelligence we have to kind of sort out between the the costume jewelry and the real jewelry, the fool's gold and the real gold, what's really meaningful, important, significant, purposeful in life, and what's just fluff. It's impermanence, uncertainty is the key insight here. Very important. We're all going to go to sleep tonight, aren't we? Can anybody say with 100% absolute certainty that they're going to wake up in the morning? Think about it. Thank you, Carol, for raising the bar. But you can't even say you're going to make it home tonight, right? I mean, yeah. So, see, like this isn't morbid. You see, this isn't like dark or pessimistic. This is realistic, isn't it? None of us know whether we have a cancer growing inside us. Is there anybody, or a tumor or something, is there anybody that could 100% absolutely say, impossible for me? Is there anybody here who can say that? No. This is a precious vehicle, but it's very fragile. We don't know. We think we know. We live in the cocoon, the delusion of permanence. And yet, if we investigate the way we're talking in this realistic way, we cannot proceed with that sense of surety and of certainty. So in the Buddhist tradition, the meditation on impermanence and the way we've done it, we can see is can be applied to every moment, every experience, but especially around sickness, old age, and death with a capital D. Is most important. It puts things in perspective. I mean, like Angie was saying, And what Angie was talking about was kind of a pleasant side effect of contemplation on death. You know, that we realize in our relationships we need to take them, more in the present moment and all that. And that's like it's a nice side benefit, right? But it could also end up just us making even us more attached to just enjoying everything. You see, there's a danger in that. Because this life is not so benign, is it? Yeah, it's really meant us to reevaluate. Because what the danger of that kind of contemplation, it could lead to just a kind of a in the face of impermanence and everything changed and nothing to count on, I'll just devote myself to what? Having as many pleasant experiences as I can have. Right? And with Netflix and Amazon Prime, I mean, you could just do it, Right? I could just, morning, noon, and night. Now they have, you know, you can have always have your meals delivered, you know. I mean, it's like you never have to go out or cook, you know. I mean, it's like, right? Is that a meaningful life? Is that a good use of this vehicle? No,
I'm saying that what I guess my point was really not to have another pleasant experience. It was to say that a lot of life is lived in the conception of something instead of in the experience itself. So just being present, period, for whatever it is really what struck me about what you were saying when you said fresh, not that it was fresh, great, or fresh anything, but just being present for what is instead of your idea about what is.
Yes, Alex. Impermanence.
Yeah, impermanence clearly is something that Buddhism has established as a core, you know, sort of teaching. But to speak to Angie's point about, you know, how wonderful it would be just to live each moment as a moment, I think, you know, it sounds good, but there are unintended consequences. And, you know, I mean, there's a real example that I can give. There's a famous patient in neuroscience called HM. And HM had this terrible epilepsy that was uncontrolled. They could not get a drug that would control his epilepsy. So they did this surgery on him that was experimental back when they did it, but they ablated a part of his brain called the hippocampus. And he woke up from the surgery, he was walking, talking, everybody thought it was wonderful, but he had no memory, no short-term memory. So every time he was experiencing something, it was for the first time. And you would walk into the room and you would meet him and he would meet you 1,000 times within an hour because it was always a new experience. So it's just, again, we have to be careful.
Well, we have to be careful. Yeah, I mean, we want to experience life directly. But, you know, purpose and meaning, you know, there are other things in life that condition the context in which those moments are appearing. Or else you're just left with a totally valueless kind of living in the present moment. Where all of a sudden playing golf becomes a spiritual path. I mean, there are books like that. You see, I mean, yeah. Right? One can be in the present moment playing golf and tennis, and cruising on your yacht, right? Just in the present moment. It's totally self-centered. You know what I'm saying? And so there's a, so that's why we have to see things in context, you know. We don't be, you know, that pleasure, happiness are all in permanent states. How long does pleasure last? Anybody ever have a pleasurable experience? All right, but let's say, what? But let's say you really milk it, right? I mean, how you know? But the actual pleasure, how long does it last? I mean, think about it. You put it in your mouth, you have a moment of pleasure. How long does that pleasure last? What? Yeah, and because then you have to do what? Like Carol said. You have to kind of artificially extend it out. Well, of course they do. Because it doesn't, you know, we have to look into the actual experiences of pleasure and pain. You know, very, very temporary. they only exist as long as the stimulus, and even the stimulus is constantly changing. That's why this, you know, mindfulness is not just living in the present moment, it's capable of being present and really seeing clearly what's going on. Yes, Noreen.
So I find pleasure in the present moment when I'm in the moment, wherever I am, seeing the interconnectedness of wherever. So there's like pleasure being in the present moment.
Yeah, yeah. When you feel connected.
Yeah. Well, when I see the connectedness, like the rhyme and reason to everything, mm-hmm. you know, then I get kind of hooked on that.
Yeah.
I do.
We want it to be permanent, don't we? But see, that's the truth. We do, you see. It's like Marilyn. Marilyn has a flash of insight, and the first thing she goes is, how can I keep it going? How can I keep it going? Right? We're all like druggies. You know, how can I keep it going? But you can't keep it going. Because why? Because all experience are composites. Causes and conditions. As soon as the causes and conditions change, or the variables come in, it will change. Tomorrow we'll learn about pleasure and pain, but yeah, this is just the way things are. I mean, again, as I said, the Buddhist teaching is based on very, very careful observation of human experience. And yes, and Louise.
So this kind of goes back to what Charlie said about awareness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you could just be aware of what's there. Mm-hmm. What's passing? Mm-hmm. Just be aware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Without attaching. Without averting.
All of that.
That's the practice.
That's the practice.
Mm-hmm. Moment to moment.
If we could actually do that moment to moment.
Why can't we do that moment to moment? Give me a good reason. I mean, it's interesting.
We're not awake. We're not awake to that. Buddhas.
Well, but what is a Buddha? You see, a Buddha is somebody who sees the nature of reality.
Yes.
It's not like supernatural. So, yeah. So this, you see how key this is? Yeah. So if we really just took this one and we really saw all experience, all phenomena, right? External and internal, as impermanent, having no substance, right? If we saw that clearly, then we'd know there's nothing to attach to. And the question is, if I said, well, Anne Louise, have you ever done that? And Anne Louise says, what?
There have been moments.
And I would say, well, Anne Louise, if there have been some moments, then you know how to do it. Why don't you do it all the time? And Anne Louise, somewhat shamefaced, would say,
I don't practice enough.
I don't practice. There you go. Yeah, thank you for, I mean, and it's not like a fault, but at least an acknowledgement. Yeah, I'm just not, you know, enthusiastic enough, disciplined enough, wanted enough, you know. I mean, you know, a long list of reasons. But, you know, if you can do it once, you can do it every time. I mean, the potential is there. As opposed to Carol, who thinks it's going to take a long time. How long was that stretch of time? I forgot. Thich Nhat Hanh says, enlightenment is momentary. One moment of insight is a moment of enlightenment. So then you think of enlightenment as a cumulative process. More and more awakened moments. Right? More and more moments of seeing clearly, like we're doing today. Remember I said, the result of this very intensive seeing everything is impermanent, you know, is that you get a feeling of this kind of open, spacious quality to life. There's nothing solid. It's kind of nice and freeing. A number of people said that in the sharing right today. It becomes a felt experience. Yes, Kevin.
So when you were talking earlier about we're seeing images, you know, we're kind of replicating them over and over. You were saying that it just kind of struck me that the energy that I use to do that, to be able to turn that, because it's not conscious, but in fact we're using a lot of energy to hold these things as permanent.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like when I think about that, it's like, oh my goodness, can I use that same kind of energy just to be with it being new and fresh? It would be.
Kevin, I mean, do you ever ruminate?
With the best.
I mean, do you ever go? I mean. Has anybody ever kind of nursed a grudge or an anger? I mean, that takes a lot of energy. I mean, think about what you had to do to maintain it, right? You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, I mean, just think about it as a process. It's like something happens, and then we have to really work it, don't we? I mean, it takes a lot of energy to keep it going. Is that true? I mean, it's quite interesting, right? You know, think about worry. You know, a lot of people love to worry. It takes a lot of energy to keep, you know, to keep it going. Because a worry only lasts a short period of time, so we have to repeat it. What? Yo. You'll have to see Carol. She's the expert on the length of time things take to work. But you're absolutely right. That's the freedom. That's the energetic freedom that comes from having an awakened mind, a free mind, you know. Because we don't realize how much of our mental energy is just looping around in through rumination, obsession, the past, the future, right? I mean, we're just, right? Remembering, going over. And it's not just, the bad things. I mean, we do the same thing with good things, right? You have a nice encounter with somebody, and how many times do you go? So if you're alive in the present and your mind is unencumbered by attachment and all this rumination, you're absolutely right. That's a lot of energy, a lot of clarity that's available to us. Any other? Yes, Kat.
I was looking in the river this morning and I saw Ducky in there swimming.
Mm-hmm.
And Ducky kept like going under and coming back up, which was really weird, and flapping like one of his wings.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over there to see what he was doing, and it turned out he was attached to a gator.
Mm-hmm.
That was like trying to eat him.
Mm-hmm.
But the gator wasn't that big, so I don't know what happened. I just figured I'd let nature take its course, but I decided Ducky might be impermanent.
Yeah, and the gator is impermanent, and you're impermanent, and that experience is impermanent. Yeah, it's just this endless unfolding, isn't it? Interesting. Anybody else? I mean, so we're going to continue to work impermanence through tomorrow morning, and then in the in the mid-morning talk, we'll move on to the second seal. I won't tell you, I'll surprise you. So this is, again, you know, this is, you know, it takes concentration, it takes mindfulness, you know. Again, I think in our culture, this ability to reflect even, you know, in a very consistent sort of disciplined way, the way, you know, we're trying to do here today, also, you know, our mind flickers, doesn't it? You're there and then you're off and there and off. So please see that this kind of contemplation has its own kind of discipline. It is, as Angie said earlier, it's a kind of concentration. Sort of, we're concentrating on impermanence. We're concentrating on, again, just, you know, how things are just changing. Our thoughts changing. How many thoughts do you think you're going to have between right now and when you get home tonight? How many different feeling states, sensory states? You know, how many? It's endless, isn't it? It's just this endless field of flickering lights of awareness. Okay. But please keep your eyes on the road. Get caught in the flickering lights. Still have to do the middle way, right? We have to keep our feet on the ground. So good. Why don't we just sit up straight for just a minute? As we said yesterday, why don't we just everyone do a quick check in with your aspiration, check in your intention for today. Just check in, how'd you do? You can keep this to yourself, we're not gonna check in. How'd you do with your intention? Intention to do our best to kind of live in the present, not wander into the past, the future, keep those boundaries up. How do we do? Each one of us had our own personal intentions for the retreat, for the day. How do we do? And of course, we had the kind of focus on, you know, really observing impermanence of all kinds within us and around us, macro, micro. How do we do? This doesn't have to be weighty. And then, you know, tomorrow's another day. We know it's just a thought at this point. But we do use the mind to propel us along. So again, it's good to evaluate at the end of the day. It's good to, just in case we do wake up in the morning, it's good to, before we go to bed, to even just have a little meditation about what we want our first thought to be when we wake up in the morning. You'll find that that's a way to connect, you know, the falling asleep to the waking up. It makes a continuity. You just kind of have a little conversation with yourself about, you know, when I wake up in the morning, I want my first thought to be, I want to remember, you know, to find my body and breath, to come into the world in mindfulness. Then you wake up in the morning, you have that, and then you set your aspiration for the day before you get out of bed. So there's a continuity. There's a technology to change. for those who want to change more quickly, more thoroughly, it's good to master the technology of change. Good, so for we'll end for today. Thank you all. Good day of practice.